You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening. Welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour here on the new 91 KRCB, where radio, yeah, is just a four-letter word. It's Michelle Jordan. Of course it is. It is Mouthful. Hope you had and are having a great holiday. Had a great weekend, got to a farmer's market or two, and now we're settling down with a glass of something yummy to drink to listen to what is going to be a great episode. There's a burgeoning wool industry, not even burgeoning. There is a wool industry in Sonoma County that I think in some areas is sort of under the radar, but is once you like peek under the rug, there is a lot going on and it's really exciting, especially since Sonoma County has long been known as having, if not the best, some of the best lamb in the world. And where there's lamb, there's wool. It's inevitable. I don't think you can have lamb or sheep without wool. So let me introduce the guests. We have Deborah Walton coming back for the third or fourth or fifth time of Canvas Ranch. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thanks, Michelle.
Mimi Luberman of Windrush Farm, both in Petaluma and Marin County, one of those interesting little places. This is your second or third visit, at least.
Happy to be here. Thanks for asking me.
And then for the first time, we have Amy Chestnut, without a T in the middle there, of Sonoma Wool Company, and Joe Posey of Pure Grow Wool. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, in Posey Ranch.
Posey Ranch. Yeah. So thanks so much, and you should see the desk here. There's just beautiful yarn, different colors. And, I mean, everything from some, I think, felted soaps, maybe?
Felted rocks.
Knitting projects underway, yarn, dryer balls, and more. So, Joe, I want to start with you because I know you go all the way back to 1993 with Pure Grow Wool. How did that come about?
Well, it started back in those days. I was, producing lambs, and that's the biggest market of the sheep industry or a sheep producer is the lamb. Mm-hmm. Wool has always been a secondary market, and just because of the volume and the prices. So I was working on getting my lamb marketed, and somebody asked, what did I do with my wool? And it kind of took me by surprise because we just sold it. We just got it off the ranch and moved it. And that was the start of a long relationship and building of a business that started to bring these products, the wool products that we had here, into bedding products. So it's ideal for bedding because of the coarseness of the wool. It kind of holds the loft in batting.
And now, when you say coarseness, are you referring to the breed of sheep that you raise?
Yes.
And their wool?
Yes. Uh-huh. For this area, it's a medium-grade wool. It's like a 28 to 30 micron is your average thickness of the fiber for this area, and that's based on the rainfall that we get.
Oh.
Sheep are pretty much designated to an area based on the amount of rain that they get in a certain area. That's how sheep's breed is designated.
I had no idea. That's really interesting.
So this area works with that wool that's a little coarser, and that's ideal for bedding products. It's a stronger fiber. It's coarser, like I said, so it holds this loftiness. So it's really good for batting in mattresses as well as in comforters or pillows or other products. Mm-hmm. So I started working with other landowners within the area, and we taught landowners how to skirt the wool, which was to put it on a table and to take out all
after
the impurities.
After it's sheared.
And then just to clean it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that started to make that product just be that much more desirable for people who were interested in buying this wool for specific bedding products. Mm-hmm. So that was the start of it in 1993. And at this point, I buy from probably 60 or 70 local and growers here and in up in the Oregon area also.
Uh-huh. Okay, I just want to get everybody involved in this conversation. Amy, yeah. You have Sonoma Wool Company.
I do.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Sonoma Wool was really launched on Posey Ranch with Joe. After seeing Joe shipping off all of his wool to a lot of larger commercial manufacturers, we thought it'd be a good idea to try to keep some of it here in Sonoma County and start making practical wool products for folks. Our goal is really to help people rediscover wool. And sitting with some women here have been doing this for a lot longer than I have. I'm definitely the newcomer to the group, but just really excited to have folks learn more about all of the attributes of wool and what an amazing fiber it is and all the different kinds of things it can do.
What sort of things do you do?
Well, we are starting out, one of our leading products is wool dryer balls. And those are felted balls that you put them in your dryer with your clothes, and they tumble around with the clothes. And the wool, one of the qualities of wool is that it actually wicks away the moisture. And so your clothes end up drying a lot faster. It reduces static cling, and it saves you on dryer time.
Does it also do what, like I was taught with a down comforter, to put three tennis balls in the dryer, and that would help keep it fluffy? Do the wool balls have the same effect?
It's a very similar concept, yes. Uh-huh. It's what helps soften the clothes also. So it reduces the drying time, and so it eliminates your need for chemical dryer sheets. So it's an all-natural way to soften your clothes and reduce your carbon footprint, too. Uh-huh.
Interesting. I think everybody should get a set of dryer balls for the holidays. I really do. Mimi, you've had Windrush Farm now for how long?
I'm starting into my 19th year. So we've been around for a bit. Mm-hmm. My sheep I breed them for softness because I'm looking, my business is mainly a yarn business. Uh-huh. So I'm looking for softness, unlike Joe, and that's one of the exciting things to try and teach people is different sheep have different breeds of sheep have different characteristics. Mm-hmm. And some are better suited to some products and some are better suited to soft next to the skin versus an outerwear that's strong and will last you for 30 years. Uh-huh. But I breed primarily for softness.
For next to the skin
stuff. Next to the skin. And because Americans really like soft wool. I'm trying to get people to understand that some of the wool that you use for an outerwear doesn't have to be as soft as merino, and it will actually last longer for you.
Now, is merino considered really soft?
It is very fine, and the softness is because the wool is so fine. Mm-hmm. The coarser the wool, the scratchier it feels. We have a very highly technical term called the PF factor, which stands for prickle factor. So the more coarse wool will feel prickly on your skin.
And that's interesting because I find merino wool so prickly I can't wear it.
Ha! That is. Well, people have very different sensitivities.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, but I breed primarily to make yarn for which we sell at farmers markets.
And you also have alpacas.
I do. I have gotten alpacas, and I have llamas as well. But the llamas have two coats. They have, like a dog, a coarse outer coat and a soft inner coat. But the alpacas are also... The llamas and alpacas also work as guard animals because we do have coyotes. Uh-huh. And they were up howling this morning at about 5 o'clock. I'm sure I'm not as far out as Joe, but I hear them. Uh-huh. They're right around.
I hear them where I am in Sebastopol.
Yeah. So the guard animals are wonderful. And if they're dual purpose, you can use the alpacas have beautiful, very soft, fine wool. So I can add that to my sheep's wool to make a really nice product for people.
Okay. And Deborah, you founded Canvas Ranch in Two Rock.
2001.
2001, I would have been right.
Yeah, good. And I raise a very unusual breed of sheep, which is called a baby doll South Down. So I kind of backed into the wool side of it by looking for something that I could do with a wool, with the wool that we sheared our sheep.
Why did you choose that breed first?
The breed is a rare heirloom breed, and they were on the endangered species list. So that was first and foremost. I like that idea. They're also only 24 inches tall, so they were a small sheep, and I came from a marketing advertising background. I knew nothing about livestock, so I wanted something that I could handle and manage, and I thought, oh, that'll be good. So when we first were shearing our sheep, we would take the wool to the landfill and then pay to have it disposed of. And I thought, well, this is really crazy. So then I started using it as mulch under my raspberry bushes, and that worked until the mice moved in. And so kept trying to think of things that I could do with it, and we didn't have very many sheep at the time. So started developing some products, and one of the things I really enjoy doing are baby comforters and pillows. So the nature of wool, from my standpoint, which Amy alluded to, is that it wicks moisture. So instead of sleeping on a down pillow, which I did through menopause, sorry for mentioning that, but I did, where you're sweating all night, wool wicks that moisture away and gives you a much sounder sleep, and also helps with REM sleep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I always remember, and I'm not gonna remember who said this, but I believe it was someone in the Clinton administration. I just read this quote, and he said, insomnia is when both sides of the pillow are hot.
Yes.
And so does wool make for a cooler pillow?
It's a much cooler pillow. It's a firmer pillow, which is actually good for sleeping, so that you're not kind of stuffed into a pillow and then therefore having trouble breathing sometimes. Feathers cause allergies for a lot of people, so there's nighttime coughing.
And they hold dust mites, too,
and
right?
And they hold dust mites.
And
so
wool does not.
Okay. And it breathes, and it's what we do is cover it with an organic cotton, which is very hard to find as well, and they're all handmade. So it's kind of a labor of love, and my sister has been doing the sewing and things like that. So it's kind of a fun product. And then I've delved into some other stuff.
Yeah, and you're going to tell us all about that and the whole process of dyeing. What we're going to do first is we're going to take a little musical break. Music, of course, by the Knitters. And then we're going to talk about what it takes to get it from the stage that Joe talked about, skirting, where you're just picking the little leaves and things out, to an actual finished product. Yep, it's the knitters. And, you know, the knitters are also X. Sort of changed up a little bit, sort of the country version of X. And X is coming to Petaluma, and the Blasters are opening for them. And I think it's December 15th, and it is right around December 15th, if it's not actually that day. That is definitely a show worth seeing. I will be there. We're talking about wool. And I've just done a lot of research on it, and the process is fascinating. And there have been some changes in Sonoma County, which I hope is going to make it easier for especially small producers, because you have to wash the wool. And washing the wool is really important and a little more, maybe harder than I thought. Is that the right way to put it? It's not so much harder, but it seems like it costs from like $10 to $15 a pound.
It depends on where you're going to wash it. On small quantities, it could cost that much.
Yeah.
And there's a limited amount of, a number of people who do washings in small quantities.
Yeah,
there haven't been any in this area for quite some time.
Yeah, now there's the new place out in Valley Forge, the Valley Forge Mercantile and Wool Mill. Mm-hmm. And I think they charge $9.98 a pound. And mm-hmm. I didn't know, how much wool does it take, say, to make a pillow or a comforter? How many pounds are we talking about?
It actually takes a lot, more than you would think. It's about 2.5 pounds to make a pillow.
Okay.
And so when you start adding in, it's not simply the washing, but it's also what is called carding, mm-hmm. which has to happen next, which is lining up the fibers. And so that's also a service that a wool mill will provide.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest cost for most of us has been, especially small producers, has been the shipping back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So you've been shipping out of the area.
Way out of the area. Uh-huh. A lot of us ship to mills in Michigan and mm-hmm. different places like that.
And Mimi, I just want everyone to jump in here. Mimi, you go to a place what?
I go to Yolo Wool Products in Woodland.
Woodland, okay.
And I can drive it up. Uh-huh. And so that makes it very much easier.
And Joe, you send yours to Texas.
Yeah, mine goes to San Angelo, Texas. And, uh-huh. and when we ship it down there, we ship it in truckloads of like 42 to 44,000 pounds mm-hmm. per truckload. And we work hard to make sure we get that truckloaded as full as possible
sure.
With tight bags or bales. Just because, again, the trucking cost is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we bring ours for the scouring process, mm-hmm. which is the washing.
Mm-hmm. So you have to wash, you have to fluff, you have to card. And then you have to put it into the bats that are the packages of long fibers. Is that right?
If you're doing what she's doing, I have roving.
That's right. Roving is another name.
That's right.
And is this a roving?
This is a roving.
Okay, right. You know, you can see the roving at certain farmers' markets. I know, Mimi, both of you go to the Marin County Farmers Market in San Rafael on Sunday. But on, I think it's alternate Sundays in Sebastopol, there is a woman who sells, I didn't realize until this very minute, that what she sells is roving in mm-hmm. all different colors. Mm-hmm. I bought like 30 different colors one time, like 10 years ago, because I decided I was going to felt a wall hanging based on, I was going to go from the underground core of magma up through an exploding volcano and all of its smoke, and I eventually gave it to a friend who started felting. But so that's what roving is. It's like mm-hmm. these long strands of single color, usually.
And one thing to add here is that when you take your fleece, if we're going to start, it comes sheared off the sheep, and then you want to skirt it, which is you're going to take off all the dirty edges of it. And then when you go to wash it, if you weigh it after you've skirted it, say it's 8 pounds, after you wash it, it'll only be 4 to 5 pounds. So you lose...
We lose about 40%.
That would be in lanolin, and what else would be the way?
In dirt.
There's still dirt in the fleece, lanolin, even though you scour, okay. or even though you skirt it and pull off.
Yeah.
You know, you take the belly wool off first. That gets taken off immediately because that's where there's a lot of fiber, a lot of vegetable matter on the bellies,
mm-hmm.
and it's a shorter wool, so you don't want to contaminate the fleece itself with your belly wool. So mm-hmm. you pull that, and then you put the whole fleece on a skirting table, which a skirting table is usually it's a round table, and it's slatted, so when you throw the fleece with the shorn side down, any second cuts, any small fibers that might have been cut during the shearing process fall through that table. And then if the table spins, you know, it takes maybe maybe 20 seconds at the most to skirt a fleece properly. Oh. You just spin it around, and you're pulling, as Mimi mentioned, all the extremities of, maybe there's some stains on it or some vegetable matter that's stuck to it. And you pull those off of the sides, which is usually from around the head or around the legs, and you take that off, and then you have a real quality fleece at that point that's ready to go into your bag or to be shipped to be washed.
Mm-hmm. Who shears?
There are several local people here.
So you you ask someone to come and share. You don't do it. That's not something one does oneself, really.
The shearers are, they're gods in the sheep world. They're worth every penny you pay them. They are really wonderful people.
And do the sheep want to cooperate?
Well, sheep are not. I mean, they're not. Most sheep are not tame, and they're not handled that often. Uh-huh. So it's definitely, there's a technique on shearing. It's an art as far as the movements. A good shearer will shear 200 sheep in an 8-hour day, so they move right through them, and that's from handling them and getting them to the stand where they're shearing them, and then letting them out. 200 of those each day is if there were enough sheep to shear all day long. Mm-hmm. But it's all about how you handle them. Most shearers in this area who are here have traveled to Australia and New Zealand and have shorn there for several seasons to gain that experience. Uh-huh. And then occasionally we have somebody from New Zealand or Australia come here and stay here for 2 or 3 months and shear the circuit in this area. Because there are sheep shearers who travel the world shearing sheep in all different areas professionally.
I've used pretty much the same shearer. Because I'm looking for a shearer who's very careful. The way I have a smaller flock, so he doesn't have to do 200 sheep. He's doing maybe 40 or 50 sheep. Mm-hmm. And I want him to shear carefully, handle the animals carefully with a minimum, if any, cuts, and to make sure that he has no second cuts. So
what's a second cut?
It's when you shear, they'll make a pass, and then it's still that they've missed. There's a bump, or their shears jumped for whatever reason. And if they go back over it, then you're going to get some ends that are only about a quarter to a half inch in with your 4 to 5 inch staple. And then when it's processed, if it stays in there, it's going to create problems when you in your roving, because you'll have
make weak spots.
You'll have the real short. It's like, it'll pill.
Okay. Interesting.
Because you've got the short fibers that'll work themselves out from the long fibers.
Okay.
So you don't want any of your second cuts in there.
Uh-huh.
So I'm looking. I work very closely with my shearer and appreciate his careful handling of my animals.
Mm-hmm. And so your animals are grown for their
wool.
For their wool.
Right.
What's their average lifespan?
I'm very lucky. I have some friends who wanted to had 10, 15 acres, and they wanted to have some animals on it. And so I have retirement acres.
Oh, how nice.
So if for any reason the older a sheep gets, the harder it is to have babies, the more medical problems you may have.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, if I notice that they might not be as successful the following year in breeding, then I'll move them to my retirement acres. Mm-hmm. And they can live for 18, 20, 22 years. Under ideal circumstances.
Uh-huh.
But that is more a hobby situation. Most of us want to keep your animals fairly young.
Uh-huh.
Their fleeces are better, and they have fewer medical problems.
And what about the baby dolls?
Same thing. And what we can do is I'll take them out of a breeding program, the ewes, if they're getting too old. Mine tend to be 10 to 12 years old. I've got some that are older, but when I take them out of the breeding program, they're 8 to 10 years old at that point. And the nice thing about the baby doll wool, one thing we've been saying is there's a term called a staple, which is the length of the fiber.
Okay.
And the baby dolls have a short staple, so the fiber is not that long, so it's harder to spin that way. It's harder to spin. But it's springy, so it makes great batting, which is the stuff that you put in pillows and comforters.
Okay, so it makes great pillows and comforters and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Thing I want to talk about now is dyeing, because I know that there's no such thing as
teal sheep. And there's some beautiful teal wool over there in front of Mimi, as well as some lovely pale green. There's some yellow. So let's talk about dyeing.
Well, I mainly use natural dyes, vegetable dyes to dye. A lot of people really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So you can use vegetable dyes. There are synthetic dyes that are what they call acid-based dyes, so you set them with vinegar. Mm-hmm. So there's a variety of different kinds of ways to do it depending on what you want for your end result. Mm-hmm. I like the vegetable dyes because my water from my dyeing goes right into my stock pond, and so I'm not worried about putting in any noxious chemicals into the pond.
Uh-huh. Now, when you say you use vegetable dyes, are they commercial vegetable dyes, or are you doing things like boiling onion skins?
I'm boiling onion skins.
Right on. That's awesome.
I'm a start-from-scratch person,
cool.
Which is why I
was hoping that
sheep instead of going to the knitting store to buy finished yarn. So, yes, I start from scratch. You would say onion skins is a wonderful natural dye. You
and
make a big
soup. What color
soup.
Do you get? Yeah,
you get a bright yellow. Yeah. And then after a while, you also get a kind of mustardy yellow. Mm-hmm. But onion skins are, you make a nice soup out of your onion skins, and then you wet your dyes and you mordant them. You need a mineral to make the wool accept the dye. Mm-hmm. And so I use alum because alum is very non-toxic, and in fact, in the old days, you used to put alum in your pickles to make your pickles crisp.
Yeah.
So that is a nice, safe mordant to use. So I use mordant with them. Although some of them, I have wonderful walnut trees, and black walnuts, you don't need to use a mordant with them.
And what color do you get from black walnuts?
Beautiful browns, mm-hmm. wonderful browns, from a russet brown to a dark, deep kind of rich brown, chocolate brown.
And how did you get teal?
So that teal is the tricky one. First you dye, and this is something I remember from doing finger painting at about 3. You dye it first yellow, and then you over-dye it in indigo. So yellow and blue make green.
And what makes indigo?
Indigo is made, and that I get as a powder.
Okay.
But indigo is made from a subtropical shrub, and there are many people actually growing Japanese indigo around here.
Oh, you have to talk indigo if it's what I think it is, that rich, rich, deep blue, which mm-hmm. is one of my favorite colors. And I know that centuries ago, if what I've read is correct, they would crush lapis lazuli to color fabric that the royalty could wear, that was how they got that beautiful blue, or so I've read. Tell us about the indigo plant.
So I took a course with Mimi and just fell in love with the whole concept of doing dyes, and I'm a farmer. So, of course, I ran out and planted some of the dyes. And so I am growing indigo, weld, woad, Dyer's coreopsis. And then there's all kinds of things that you just find around, like eucalyptus makes a beautiful dye. And
what color?
It's a orange color. Yeah,
right, orange.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can do raspberry leaves and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So either the flowers, the stems of some of the things, weld is one of those, and you can just chop up the stems and do that. And woad, it's the roots. Am I right about that? I think so. Woad is the roots.
And it makes what color?
Red.
That was going to be my next.
Matter. Matters.
Oh, matter.
Matter root. Matter root. Are you growing matter?
Yes. But I have it. It takes 3 years before it develops.
Because red is the hard, is one of the hardest colors to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So growing the plants is really fun, too.
Uh-huh.
So, and I've been playing around just with doing things, but I'm really a novice when it comes to all
this.
Now,
you have something here that I'm uncovering that has several colors. I want you to tell us about this.
Okay. So then once you get started with this, one of the things you can do, so this, the white part of this is felted baby doll south down.
And what I should say is it is a piece of cloth about maybe 6 to 8 inches wide and 3.5-4 feet long.
So what this is felted, and then...
Is it wet felted?
Wet felted. And then you can take some other materials, other pieces of wool, and needle felt, which is mm-hmm. using needle a
to
needle tool.
You take a whole bunch of wool, mm-hmm. and you take a needle, and you mm-hmm. poke it until mm-hmm. it looks like your mm-hmm. grandfather or whatever else. I had my daughter and her husband felted. My daughter in her orange wedding dress and her husband in a Hawaiian shirt and shorts and glasses. And I had a friend felt them, and it looks like them. And she just, oh, yeah, yeah, just poke it till it looks like them.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the ways to think about wet felting, if you're not sure what that is, here's what will do it. Have you ever, or did your mother ever accidentally put a wool sweater into the washing machine and it comes out as a baby sweater or a doll sweater? That's wet felting, basically. It's the mm-hmm. same principle, right? It shrinks.
It's heat, hot water, mm-hmm. and agitation.
Right. Okay. And it's not so much. It does shrink, but it also just embeds the fibers uh-huh. in together. So,
and we should say, anyone who's seen this or know, I think everyone in the wool industry must know about this. There's a woman who could not join us today because she has the misfortune to be in New Orleans for Thanksgiving weekend, Heidi Harris. She felted a yurt. She felted a yurt that is at its center 9 feet tall, 50 feet around, has walls at the outside 5 foot 7 inches, and it creates a 200 square foot room. And you were involved in that as well. It was wet felted. And you all know about it, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows about it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And that was wet felting.
Right.
And when it rains, it doesn't get wet.
Yeah, the really amazing part of that was that Heidi lives in a suburban neighborhood. And so she took the wool, the great big wool panels, and rolled them up and dragged them around her neighborhood behind a golf cart
yes.
to felt them. So, imagine,
and that's the agitation that Mimi just mentioned.
It comes from the Mongolians made mm-hmm. yurts originally, and they would roll up the wool inside their carpets and use the horses and right. drag them around mm-hmm. the Mongolian plains to felt them. So,
mm-hmm. and I think that's what speaks to all the attributes of felt. We've got artisans, we've got yarns, we've got roving, we've got beautiful artwork, and we also have the practical uses as walls and tents and, you know.
Yeah, describe your use.
We've got some dish drying mats is another product that we're making.
You got to hold those up, Amy, because
here
I'm across.
Okay. I will send this over to you.
Okay.
So it's the same thing that Deb just had. It's a felted wool, but it's a practical use.
It's a rectangle.
You would put this right next to your sink instead of having cotton towels or those microfiber, you know,
plastic things,
you can now use wool, and you'll just set your dishes on it, and it'll absorb the water, and it'll keep your counter dry.
And it won't mildew underneath?
It's mildew resistant. And
that's remarkable.
And so, again, there's so many ways we can use wool.
Uh-huh. So, and this is part of your business. You
yes.
make these and sell these.
Yes, we do.
That is really cool, especially, I mean, that's one of the problems to solve, mm-hmm. is you got to dry your dishes somehow, and you always forget. It's like, oh, it's actually been 3 weeks since I lifted the whole thing up, really? And there's the mold and the slime. And what is it about wool that doesn't happen? What are the properties of wool?
It's got a natural, it's naturally mildew resistant and, you know.
Well, I think what I see with wool, it's absorbing. It's a breathable fiber. Mm-hmm. So it's constantly adjusting, and it'll do that. That's why, you know, we're working on projects for insulation, even in buildings, in big commercial buildings and such, for green buildings, because it keeps things cool, and it also keeps things warm. It's mm-hmm. a natural thermometer. And with this product here, it's a situation where you set something that's a little wet on top of it, and it grabs that moisture and it holds it, but then it lets it go. It releases it throughout the day. That wool fiber will continue to release those water molecules
it
that
just
are
goes
attached
into the
to
atmosphere.
It and just
mm-hmm.
let them evaporate. So then the next time you put a dish on there, it's dry again. So it's a very practical, common sense product that just, you know, we don't think about because we've all moved into the best new thing out there, which is usually plastic or some sort of, you know, chemically made product. And this has given people the opportunity to not have to go that route at uh-huh. this time.
Now that part, oh, go ahead.
Another thing that's going on that I think is really exciting is the wool fabrics.
That's just where I wanted to go.
Okay. Now what they're doing, they're able to make a fabric that, well, they've been making them, but companies like Smart Wool and Ibex and several others for skiers, it's a very, very thin T-shirt that will stay cool when you are needing it to, and also warm, keep you warm enough because it's breathing with you the whole time. So one of the things that we would, I'm part of Fiber Shed, which is the group that did the yurt and everything. One of the things that I think is really exciting is trying to get the wool milled to a point where it becomes a fabric that you can just make, you know, T-shirts and pants out of.
Now, the new mill out in Valley Forge, they showed me one of their machines, and I think it's the one with something like over 9,000 needles. And they, I think it's Casey, knows because he actually counted the needles. He can make fabric as thin as 1/32 of an inch. So is that the sort of thing then that we're talking about?
Exactly, yeah. And then it's a matter of finding the way to sew that so that it also continues to breathe and, you know.
And that's one of the things I think that people who go out in the wild, who go outdoors a lot, know. Like, if you kayak, especially at night, to Angel Island, you really don't want to wear cotton or polyester sweatpants. I speak from experience. And you really don't want to wear cotton socks, no matter how warm they seem when you're, you know, on land. You want to wear wool. Because even if water splashes on you, you're not going to be wrapped in water.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's the same. You said something that I think most people, I think this is a key point in letting people or encouraging people to rediscover wool. It keeps you warm when you're cold, but it keeps you cool. You don't have to put your wool comforter away when summer comes, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
No, use it year
that
round.
Was a real that was a revelation to me. Yeah.
That's why it's great for babies, because they can't regulate their own temperature. They can't throw off a blanket.
Right.
So having a comforter that is self-regulating, basically, is wonderful for babies. And mattresses, too.
And mattresses as well, yes. And the other thing we've had here, and I have a sample
hold it
of
up.
It. It's actually a woven wool fabric. And we make those. I contract out with Pendleton Woolen Mills. So that product there is actually woven, and that's out of our local wool here in Sonoma County. And we put that into a yarn, and then it's woven into fabric that's 90 inches wide. So it's able to be used. A lot of people, when they make mattresses, they'll sew that fabric right on top of the mattress.
Oh, what a
so
great
you have
idea.
That layer on the top of your mattress underneath your sheet. So you're completely encapsulated in wool because you have that underneath you, and then you have a comforter over you and you're sleeping with a pillow. It's a great product. We use a lot of those, or we sell a lot of those for puddle pads in baby cribs, and they work very, very well because they're breathable. They're also kind of therapeutic in the sense of the wool itself, because there's always a minimal amount of lanolin still in the wool as it goes through the process, and they've been very, very popular for puddle pads in cribs.
And people with fibromyalgia and a few other things too. It's great for the hospitals use them now.
Oh, really?
And in ours, we don't do any dyeing with any of our wool. Uh-huh. It's we just keep it natural, the natural color. Wool's just another, I mean, dyeing is another opportunity for people to use the wool with different colors. But with our program, we just keep it at the natural color.
It makes sense that why would you want to dye it?
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
That makes sense for bedding. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back with more talk about Sonoma County wool.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away, leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines
somewhere and fly. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Don't leave me, I cry. Don't take that airplane ride. But you locked me out of your mind, left me standing here behind. Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Slowly fading out of sight.
You're listening to Mouthful. Real quickly, our guest, Deborah Walton of Canvas Ranch, Mimi Luberman of Windrush Farms, Amy Chestnut of Sonoma Wool Company, and Joe Posey of Posey Ranch and Pure Grown Wool. An exciting new industry. They say, you know, they say America doesn't make anything. Look at this. This is fabulous. And I have now on my lap this beautiful baby comforter made from the Baby Doll Southdown sheep and sewn in organic cotton. Mm-hmm. Why is it so hard to find organic cotton?
I believe it's because the cotton industry in the United States went the way of the tobacco industry and a lot of other things. But almost all cotton now is processed in China, as is a lot of the wool and mm-hmm. a lot of the other. Obviously, cashmere. I raised the cashmere goats, too. So cashmere is all coming from China now.
Really? I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to talk about cashmere, too.
Yeah.
But tell us about the organic
cotton. So I have to get this organic cotton out of North Carolina. That's where I... So I have to have that shipped in, mm-hmm. too.
So is it because of the boll weevil?
I don't know.
Just remember that song from when I was a little girl, the boll weevil song,
yeah.
Getting in the cotton. You also, I want you to pick up that, you showed us the pillow. Talk about that pillow, which is
okay.
Really nice.
Yeah, these are great. So, again, for sleeping, it really is so wonderful to sleep on. You know, all you have to do, you don't have to wash these ever.
Really?
You can put
wow.
them out in the sun, and
uh-huh.
the sun will just... there's nothing that really is going to harm this as long as you put like a duvet cover over a
sure.
comforter
oh, sure.
or a pillowcase over this.
Because your makeup will rub off otherwise.
Yes.
So. And one thing I noticed right away when I put my head on it, when I've slept on down, you know, forever. And the one thing about down, if you have to shake it out and reposition the feathers, otherwise you're sleeping on your mattress
yeah.
with the down on either side of you. Mm-hmm. And I do love down. Even just, I don't know, I just love down because I think there's a lot of mystique to it and you think of the princess and the pea and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is wonderful. I can't wait to sleep on a down pillow, which I'm going to be doing very soon. It's a beautiful pillow. So, cashmere. There's a little baggie. It's like a sandwich bag full. Oh, it's so soft. And cashmere does not come from sheep.
It does not. It comes from goats. There are no cashmere bred goats, but it is, so it's not a breed. In sheep, there's thousands of breeds of sheep. With goats, there's usually only seven, and mostly they come in either dairy or meat. And cashmere goats are, they could be meat goats or they could be dairy goats, but primarily their use is for their fiber, which we comb. And then, again, the same kind of thing where you have to have it processed. You have to have it scoured, cleaned, and processed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I love the cashmere, and I love the goats.
I have to tell a little very quick story about Mouthful this one time. The last time I did a show on wool, a number of years ago, and we had a cashmere goat in the studio, this little cashmere goat. I'm sorry, I can't remember the guest name right now. This wonderful woman.
Judy.
Judy Lang.
Yes, okay. And what I didn't know, it's a little controversial, what I didn't know is that some of the people coming in to do the show that was going to follow Mouthful were quite inebriated. And I went out in advance of the goat and put my hands up and said, I don't want anyone to come in yet. Let us just get the goat out of here first because he's a little freaked out. And so the goat, this goat who hadn't been shorn yet, walks out leaving his little pellets behind him. And I will never forget the look on these faces of these highly, they were doing a special show, these very inebriated people. It was a great behind the scenes moment in Mouthful. Mimi, you have a breed of sheep. I think it's a sheep, mm-hmm. not an alpaca, that does pure black wool,
Shetland sheep.
Okay.
And they're also a very, they're an heirloom sheep. They are off the watch list. They were endangered at one point, but they're coming back. And they're very small as well. They're a short-tailed sheep, so they have a very cute little tail. And they have a true black. Their wool stays black and does not fade to gray, which most of the sheep are born black, and then they fade to gray by the time they're 3 or 4 years old. So it's a beautiful, deep, rich, rich black.
Oh, how nice.
It's wonderful.
I love a good, rich black.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any there? You're reaching for something. Yay, yeah. Look at it.
Oh, isn't that gorgeous?
Oh, and it's a true really black. Soft.
Shetland wool is quite extraordinary. It's a very, very different wool. It has a loft in it. They're small sheep, so probably Joe gets 8 to 10 or 12 pounds of wool from some of his big wool girls, but they only get 3.5 to 4 pounds per sheep. But it has a lightness and a loft and a very fine, delicate feel about it.
It feels really wonderful.
I like it very, very much. Yeah. So, and they're interesting little sheep. They're very, very old breed, and they're full of personality. That's one thing we haven't said. We like our sheep. And please don't anybody say sheep are dumb to us.
I would never say that.
I wouldn't, because they're really very smart, smart animals. But they're like a school of fish. They're a flock. Mm-hmm. And they react like a flock. So if something startles one of them, they'll all startle. Mm-hmm. But they're very smart, and particularly they're very good at getting food. Particularly when you think you've shut that door to the barn and it's not quite shut. They'll get in there and just eat to their heart's thing. Uh-huh. Well, that can be a problem too. But sheep are, and they're very endearing. They have personalities, and it's a lovely job being a shepherd, don't you think?
I agree. Yes.
And Joe has a lot more sheep than I do, so he knows.
Gosh, I forget what I was going to say next. Darn. Oh, well.
The one thing I'll just touch bases on, you mentioned organic on the cotton. It's also a challenge on organic wool in the United States. And it's challenging for producers in the United States because of the standards that we have here. They're very strict, and which is good. Uh-huh. But a lot of the distributors and people who are buying and selling wool and marketing it are buying all that wool from overseas because their organic standards are different. So they're able to come in, label it organic, and say that it's certified organic, but they're not saying from where. So it's a little deceptive for us producers who are trying to market this wool and doing, humane farmed practices and maybe have our land certified organic. But sometimes it's a little more challenging to certify the animal or certify the soaps that are used in the washing process. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge that I have sometimes competing on a larger scale at the national level, because there seems to be a lot of people who just say, well, we don't care where it comes from, we just want it to be organic. And I push to say that I think local is the bigger program
Local first.
Local on how we take care of the land as well as the animals and the wool once we take it off the sheep. Mm-hmm. So that's the marketing program that we work with at the Sonoma Wool Company as well as Posey Ranch. So that's something I think that we need to continue to work on in our promotions of our local wool.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I remember what it was I wanted to ask. Wool is entirely sustainable in that as soon as you shear a sheep, the next crop is on its way, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're shorn once a year?
Most of them are shorn once a year. We have a 12 12-month clip is what we normally call it. And in this area, it's usually April, May. You know,
is that
after
because
the rainy
it's going to get warm?
Yes, it's kind of partly it's going to get warm, and also it's again based on the growing season of the grasses. And about June, the grasses start to mature and the seed heads start to set. And you want to get the wool off before those seed heads set because they'll get stuck in the wool and you'll have a lot of contamination in your fleeces.
Okay, interesting. Okay, we don't have a lot of time left here on Mouthful. So what I want to do now is tell people how they can get your products or more information. I know Fibersure. I know. Well, first of all, backing up, your website's great. You have lots of information, particularly about your farming practices and the humane requirements that you have, including of the wool that you buy. It's just Posey Ranch, right?
PoseyRanch.net.
.net. And then Sonoma Wool Company has a great website.
Thank you. Yep. It's Sonoma Wool Company, spelled out, SonomaWoolCompany.com. And we have you can buy our products there, and we are also marketing them in several local retail shops as well. You can find it at Made Local in Santa Rosa, Sebastopol Hardware Store, Rex's Hardware in Petaluma. Just starting to get them into Whole Foods, actually.
Whole Foods.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay, and Mimi?
We have a website, but it talks more about our educational programs. You can find me easily at the San Rafael Civic Center Farmers Market on Sunday.
Okay, yeah, that's a great place. And then you do an open house?
We do have a number, so if you check on the Windrush Farm, it's at wordpress.com. Check there. We do have open houses, and we have special events. In the spring, we have Lamb Day, which is right around May 1st, so people can come to the farm and see the lambs. And we do a lot of demonstrations about wool and how to use wool. Weaving in.
And Mimi also does the most amazing classes. So if people are just all of a sudden going, I've got to know more about wool, she's the woman to go to. Between learning how to skirt a fleece to dyeing and everything, I learned anything I have forgotten. No, anything I know, I learned from Mimi.
Well, thank you, Deborah.
How do people find your products?
Oh, so canvasranch.com. And we are also at the Marin Civic Center Farmers Market on Sundays and the Santa Rosa Wells Fargo Center Market on Saturdays.
Right. And do you take any? I'm trying to remember. Do you take some of the wool products?
We do. And you can also just email me info@canvasranch.com and I can.
You can order something and pick it up at the farmer's market.
You can order it. And we do custom things. For instance, if you have an odd size bed and need a mattress pad or something like that,
that's
we'll
great
do that
know.
Kind of stuff. And then as far as one other thing I wanted to mention is that as farmers, we're also using our sheep in our crop rotations. So that, you know, as far as the sustainability factor of sheep, it's just amazing because what we'll do is put them in after the crops are all done. They eat down the crops. They put down some manure. And then we lease out our sheep to vineyards.
Right, yeah, you've been on, I think, the Today Show talking about that or something.
CBS News. And we're now doing solar fields, which is pretty fun. So solar panels are low to the ground, and you can't really go in there with a weed whacker or a lawnmower. So we're now, like, you know, the sheep go to solar fields. It's pretty interesting.
That's good. And then, Joe, you sell primarily to producers, right? To people who are going to take your wool and make things?
Yes, to manufacturers to make product from them. One of them that I use that uses a lot of my wool is Lifekind products. They're out of Grass Valley, but they use a lot of my wool in their products. And Vivatique has been one. And then Tomorrow's World, which is back on the East Coast, also uses the wool. And what we're working on here with the Sonoma Wool Company is when they take that product here from my wool, you know, then they put their name on it and go with it, which is fine. That's part of the business. But we said, you know, why not identify ourselves a little bit more, talk about our practices and put it in the market through the Sonoma Wool Company. So that's what we're working on.
Okay, and that beautiful woven stuff that you have, we'll be able to find that from you
very soon. Very soon.
That is great.
We have a bunch in the process right now.
And on that note, we are out of time. Deborah Walton, Mimi Luberman, Amy Chestnut and Joe Posey, thank you so much for being here on Mouthful, and I hope it is a great holiday season for you with your fabulous, beautiful wool. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Let's go.